Every life that is born yearns for life. When a child is born, their senses awaken. The child opens its eyes and sees light. It begins to breathe and feel the air. It cries. It hears sounds. Lies beside its mother or father and feels the warmth of their touch. And the child flourishes. The life that we say has been born anew from God's eternal Spirit is similar and beckons us to a deep place that transforms our being. The beating heart experiences love and acceptance, and that love is warmed into love for life. It is an experience that is like breathing new air, about which John Wesley wrote, "God breathes unceasingly in the soul, and the soul breathes unceasingly unto God." That is the gift of the Spirit. Life in its flourishing fullness, nurtured and embedded in the most profound experience of God. Today, as mentioned, is Pentecost, the day we celebrate the giving of the Spirit, at least according to the writer of Acts. And I don't know about you, but I have wrestled with understanding the whole nature of this day and the whole theological breadth of the giving of the Spirit. Other than just what I said, which I wholeheartedly believe, I know I fall short of it. And I know, and I wonder if this is true for you, that it is a concept so deep that I just park it into the realm of mystery. But what is clear doctrine in terms of the Spirit that has been embraced by the church over the years is that faith is deeply intertwined with the concept of the Spirit, such that, as the theologian Moltmann describes, it is not faith that makes Jesus the Christ, but rather Jesus as the Christ who creates faith. It is not hope that makes the future into God's future. Rather, it is this future that awakens hope. And all of this is due to the presence of God manifest in and through the Spirit. It is the Spirit that makes the experience of Jesus real. It is the Spirit that unites us, and it is the Spirit that leads us into the truth and freedom so mapped by Jesus and so part of the salvation plan of God. And therefore, the Spirit boldly forms the kind of glue that links Jesus to us and helps us, the church, to begin to frame the picture of the future. History and eschatology, the future, are intertwined and deeply seen as nothing other than the work of the Spirit. But what we should try to avoid, I suggest, is a kind of synchronistic or homogenized picture of the Spirit, because the New Testament picture far more nuanced and varied than we tend to think about. We tend to be guided by the understanding of the Spirit as given in Acts as the uniform model and the picture of the beginning of the church, that it was actually during the celebration of the Jewish Pentecost in Jerusalem that the Spirit enveloped them. Whereas in Matthew and Mark, it's not really on the radar. For Paul, the Spirit is given upon confession, as indicated in Romans 8. And something similar in the Gospel of John, where particularly in John 20, 22, the risen Jesus breathes the Spirit to the gathered disciples. And so the Spirit, or the Paraclete, is available to all those open to it. There is, therefore, in the New Testament, in general, therefore, no specific occasion of the launching of the church. But there is in Acts. There is in Acts. And what I suggest is the better biblical reading of the story is to listen and to understand what the writer is trying to say and what is the deep theology in his picture of the Spirit. Historically, of course, the writer has the giving of the Spirit anchored around a Jewish festival. One of three major festivals in the Jewish calendar. It was sometimes called the Festival of Weeks, since it was celebrated 7 complete weeks, or 50 days, after the Passover, hence the Greek derivation. Sometimes it was called the Feast of Harvest because it included the harvest of the later grains. Sometimes it was called the Day of the First Fruits because the first loaves made from the new grain were offered to the altar. So it was a festival with agricultural significance, a wonderful celebration. People had gathered to celebrate, to rejoice. But it also has very profound theological significance and importance because it commemorated the deliverance of the Jewish people from slavery, a day that remembered the formation, and this is important, a day that remembered the formation of their identity as the select chosen of God. So the writer is using this Jewish event, Pentecost, and transforming it to highlight the launching of the new identity of the Church of Jesus Christ. But why? To what end? To unite the people to the faith in Jesus. On the morning of Pentecost, we read, the faithful had all gathered together, and that suddenly a wind filled the room, symbolizing the Spirit. Old Testament imagery vibrates throughout this scene. First, from Ezekiel, with powerful reference to God as Ruach, the breath, the wind. When Ezekiel, by divine command, prophesied to the wind and called it to blow over the dead bodies in the valley of his vision, it was the breath of God that breathed over them and filled them with new life. At Pentecost, after the death of Jesus, the writer would have us know that here the disciples were touched with the living power of God, the same breath that filled the dry and dead bones. The disciples, therefore, became filled with new, invigorated life, new vision, new motivation, new energy, new reason, newborn with the breath of God. And they spoke different languages, so all could hear and understand. Further symbolism of the new unity that springs from the message of the gospel that was to reach all the Jews of the diaspora. The image and devastation of Babel, Old Testament image of scattering, is reversed. All Jews could unite in Jesus. And there's further imagery from the Old Testament, Joel 2, that is carefully threaded into the story. And Peter is the herald that announces the long-awaited dream of salvation and deliverance, and that through the power of the Spirit, Jesus is the one they long for, the one who was to gather, restore, and unite all in the faith, to see the visions, to dream the dreams. Unity is again the call. Community is the outcome. A new community of faith. And we read that all were amazed. Some were perplexed. But it was not an ecstatic commotion of wildly inebriated people. It wasn't over the top stuff. Rather, here, the Spirit led them to something other. The rabble who had gathered for the festival celebration became a community. And it all derives from the power of the Spirit. Here, it is not what the Western Church's Nicene Creed maintains. Here, the Spirit does not proceed from the Father and the Son. Here, the Spirit proceeds from the Father, rests on the Son, and from the Son radiates into the world to unite all in the faith. And verse 44 of the text, not in our reading this morning, but later of this chapter. Verse 44 says it so neatly. The people gathered together and shared all things in common. No differentiation. No division. No problem of racism, sexism, individualism, nationalism, classism, discrimination, all of that overcome in this new community. They became bonded to each other, and they celebrated each other. They communed with each other. They were united to each other. It's a lovely story, an American Indian tale about two men. I'm going to be referring to it later with the children's talk at 10:30, but the story's enough for us. The two men, one was older, one was younger. They were sitting by a fire. When they'd eaten, the older man held up a piece of wood and asked, "What's this?" The younger man said, it's a piece of wood. The old man looked disgruntled, and he put the stick down and was silent. The younger man was disturbed, so he said again, it's wood. It's a piece of the tree. And the older man brightened up. That's better, he said. But now, think of the tree. When you can see each leaf as something bound, something connected, then you will begin to see the tree. And when you see the tree, you can see the spirit of the tree, the whole tree, and how connected it is, and maybe learn something from it. The church, empowered by the Spirit at Pentecost, is one, the writer would have us know, that is connected and which gathers and leads to true and genuine community. There people belong. There they are one. No one was isolated. No one was left out or alone. All a part of the tree. And that is the picture the writer encourages for us. The picture of the Pentecost church. When people have told you that the Spirit has directed them to go a certain way which does not lead to the building of community, which is disjointed or disconnected from the faith of the community, from what we understand from the writer of Acts, be very suspicious. And so what can we take from this amazing biblical story? One, that Pentecost summons us to hear the good news, to let the Spirit breathe new life, new motivation, new energy, new reason into our collective church bones. Pentecost summons us to let the Spirit move among us to inspire freshness and vigor into our church life so that we can become an impassioned community of God. Two, Pentecost calls us to be one, to be united, to cast aside the criticism and the measure of discontent, all of that that mars that which is creative. And three, Pentecost invites us to open ourselves to the leading of the Spirit. It invites us to be open to new possibilities, to be born anew, and to embark indeed on a journey in the celebration of life, in its flourishing fullness, nurtured and embedded in the most profound experience of God, empowered every day in the Spirit of God, to the glory of God.